Hello and welcome to the British Chamber of Commerce Singapore's podcast channel. With over 15,000 downloads since launch, we are excited to bring you Season 4 featuring in-depth content on business, global affairs and news across Singapore, ASEAN and the United Kingdom. We've had some extraordinary guests on our channel, including W Series driver Abby Eaton.
I've got thoughts of the future now. I'd love to try and kind of mentor some of the younger drivers, you know.
Renowned UK international education champion, Professor Sir Steve Smith.
Over about a four-year period, we kept increasing the resources going into mental health division.
Chief Executive and Director of the London Design Museum, Tim Marlowe.
The way we design is actually thinking about the needs of everyone.
And CEO of the industry cluster group at JTC, Alvin Tan.
If you look at PDD, we are creating an ecosystem of companies, government agencies and industry associations in the digital space.
Thank you, as always, for your continued support, and I hope you enjoy this podcast.
Okay, welcome, everyone, to this British Chamber of Commerce in Singapore podcast. I'm Nikki Houghton. I'm Vice President of Marketing for an organization that's rooted in customer engagement. I'm also a member of the British Chamber of Commerce's Marketing Board in Singapore, so hence my role as host today. I'm really pleased to be joined by Richard Chataway, behavioral science expert, as well as Dave Patman, customer experience expert from Go Beyond Partners. Go Beyond is a consulting firm. So as part of the Web Help Group, they work on broadening and deepening customer service to help break down organizational silos for more of an omnichannel experience. Their services focus on consulting, innovation, management, technology, as well as organizational excellence with their clients across a range of different sectors. Headquartered in the UK, the company also now has a presence in Asia Pacific to support brands based in this region, hence this podcast today. So Richard and Dave, welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Nikki. Great to be here.
Thank you. Lovely to meet you. Good to be here.
Fab to have you both. So I'm just going to pause here and just say, please do give any further information, both on Go Beyond Partners and also the work that the business is doing, particularly in the APAC region, and any other information you'd like to give about yourselves.
Thanks, Nikki. I'll take that. It's Dave here. So, as you described, Go Beyond Partners focuses on helping clients to drive customer-led growth and profitability. So what we mean by that is we look at the relationships and interactions that organizations have with their customers and help them to find ways to create more value from those interactions and relationships, both for the brand, but also importantly for the customer as well. So the work that we do with clients in the region includes working with clients in financial services, retail, in e-commerce, you know, across all sectors, where very often we're looking at their journey. So we're looking at all of the interactions across a particular journey in buying and using products, but also we're looking at the interactions that happen within contact centers. So where their people are talking to customers and what that experience generates. So we spend a lot of time looking at the quality of the experience, but also the cost. So many organizations are facing commercial pressure, but also wanting to adopt digital experience as well. So we spend a lot of time looking at how to optimize the cost of the experience without compromising the quality of it for their customers.
Makes complete sense. Good. Yeah. So obviously there's a two-way benefit there. The customer benefits from a better experience from the brand, but the brand also is able to be more efficient as well, as you mentioned, sure, during these cost-efficient times. So great. Excuse me. Okay, that's fabulous. So just moving on to today's session, it's actually episode one of a two-episode series from Go Beyond Partners. So this one is titled Behavioral Science and Its Impact on Customer Experience. Topics will include an overview of the changing customer experience landscape, particularly in the retail, e-commerce, and financial services industries, a bit of an introduction to behavioral science, and then obviously some insights for brands listening, so why businesses should introduce behavioral science into its customer experience design and journey across such a culturally diverse region such as Asia Pacific. And so with that, I'll delve into the first question here. So what are the notable changes in the customer experience landscape that you have been seeing at Go Beyond Partners? And How are these impacting customer experience strategies today?
Thanks, Nikki. It's a really interesting question. And I guess one way I would answer it is nothing has changed at the same time as everything has changed. And what I mean by that is that the fundamentals of human nature, if you like, what we all as customers expect in the way that we're treated, in terms of what we value, the importance of, you know, security and status and how other people see us, all of those kind of fundamental human behaviors are persistent, you know, they're fairly constant. But then what's changing is the impact that technology is having, societal change, economics is having on us as consumers in terms of the speed, I guess, and the nature of some of those interactions that we have with organizations. You know, we're all walking around with a supercomputer in our pockets that, you know, in the relatively near past would have been, you know, regarded as science fiction. And yet what we can now do with those phones, with AI that's embedded both for language and for images, and, you know, the slick nature of mobile apps, social media and websites, means that actually we expect very often our entire world to be that slick and easy to use and intuitive. And yet quite often when we interact with organizations, what we find is that when that digital experience means that we need help or support or something doesn't work, you know, it goes from being digital to decidedly analog very quickly, you know. So that's when we find ourselves queuing in phone lines, waiting for phones to be answered, sending emails that don't get replied to quickly, and generally, you know, having an experience that isn't in line with that slick digital experience that we get on our phones. So a lot of what we see is this gap, I guess, appearing between the digital experience, which is highly convenient, and then the offline experience, which is the occasion where we need that sort of support from brand. And quite often, organizations in the pursuit of cost saving can actually create barriers between themselves and their customers. So they want everything to be self-service, and when that works, that's great. But then actually, they make it difficult for customers to reach an organization when they need support. And that really is a real focus of what we do, trying to find that balance between convenience and conversation. You know, when should you be available to customers, and how to do that in the least effort way in those interactions.
Got it. Okay, fantastic. And I've heard you speak before about a concept called nudge practice. So could you give a bit more information around nudge practice and behavioral science also, either you or Richard?
Sure. My role at Go Beyond Partners is as director of behavioral science, and I head up the nudge practice. That's a newly created entity within the business. And what we mean by behavioral science in its simplest form is understanding how people make decisions, and particularly how people make decisions in the real world, as opposed to in a theoretical world. So, my background in behavioral science, I guess I've been working in this field for about 15 years or so, initially working within government in the UK on anti-smoking comms. So I was started off kind of persuading people and influencing decisions around quitting smoking and encouraging people to quit smoking. And from there, there was a lot of best practice that was being developed within government around a lot of public health challenges and behavior change challenges in general. And there's actually been, interestingly, it's been relatively slow in adoption and usage by the private sector as opposed to the public sector. We don't often think about behavior change in the private sector as much as we do in the public sector. And you know, my having that background, I then moved into applying it within the private sector, and specifically leading behavioral science-based consultancies, helping with primarily customer challenges, but also internal challenges around behavior change. And I guess the value of that, and why we now have a nudge practice within Go Beyond, is that, you know, I wrote a book that came out a couple of years ago called The Behavior Business. And the opening line of that is, if you're in business, you're in the business of behavior. And what that means, what I mean by that, is that every challenge that businesses face has a behavioral component to it. At a very simple level, if you want to drive revenue as a business, you need people to buy your products and services, and that is a behavior. And you need the people within your business to deliver those products and services in the best way possible. So you want them to move from currently doing X to doing Y. And what behavioral science gives us is a framework through disciplines like social psychology, behavioral economics, and so on, for understanding how people make those decisions. And to build on what Dave was just saying there, you know, we're living in a world now where increasingly those decisions that consumers are making are becoming more and more remote. So, you know, more and more interactions with businesses are happening in the digital world. As Dave says, people have supercomputers in their pockets now in the form of mobile phones that allow us to, and enable us to engage with companies and businesses on that kind of level. So understanding how people make those decisions when those decisions are remote is increasingly important. And whether that's about which products and services they buy, how they, you know, source information about products from you, and those customer service and customer experience based interactions, behavioral science gives us a framework for understanding that. And that's what we do in the Nudge practice, is effectively we bring to bear that science of understanding how people make decisions. And in particular, what behavioral science has told us, you know, we've learned more about human behavior in the last 50 years than we have in the previous 5,000 years. What behavioral science has told us is a lot of that decision making is not what you would expect. And it's not totally rational in a lot of contexts. We are not supercomputers ourselves. Therefore, we don't behave in totally rational ways. And that's what behavioral science is all about. And in the Nudge practice, what we do is we understand those, how those decisions are made, that they can often be non-rational, that they can be influenced by factors like likability, trust, and so on. And we try and design processes, systems, communications in a way that takes those into account. And when we say, what do we mean by a nudge? A nudge is basically a way, a change in a way a choice is presented to an individual that influences the choice that is subsequently made.
Wonderful. Okay, yes, I know it's when the pandemic hit, if we can still mention the pandemic, I know we've moved forwards, but a lot of consumers were forced to move online, even those that traditionally would prefer in person. So as you mentioned, a lot of our interactions with brands now do take place online, and there is that heightened expectation as well, especially when consumers work across multiple brands, they expect the same level of experience as those leading brands are providing online. So it's important that brands step up. And even though things have moved online, I know that a best mix of online and offline experiences work really well. And I love what you were saying when I think about the way my marketing brain works. Obviously, everything needs to be set up around the people who are going to be interacting with your brand. So behavioral science is a fantastic window into what consumers expect. Also, I would understand. So just tell me a bit more about why brands should introduce nudge practice and behavioral science to their processes. What's the potential opportunities and benefits that would be bringing to their own brands?
Sure. Well, as I say, you know, at fundamental level, understanding how and why people behave as they do, gives you, as you say, provides a window into consumer decision making. And therefore, if we understand, you know, why people behave as they do, then we can better influence those decisions. And so, you know, that's at a very basic level, I guess, the value that behavioral science can deliver. But, you know, more directly in terms of how we've applied behavioral science in the past and how we are doing so with clients at the moment, is addressing kind of some of the challenges that Dave touched on a moment ago as part of those looking at those customer journey challenges that we help clients with at Go Beyond Partners. So one of the example is around channel shift. So, you know, obviously, as we say, there's been a particularly post COVID, there's been a shift in customer behavior towards digital channels, and a lot of that was forced, as you say, because of the circumstances of COVID. But obviously there are operational benefits to organizations, and there are benefits to consumers around engaging, for example, with self-service options. So, you know, mobile banking being one example, you know, the ability to be able to check your balance, make transfers and so on 24 hours a day through digital and mobile banking is a significant improvement on previous customer experience. So, you know, the more that banks, for example, can nudge people into using those products and services and using self-service options, the better it is for the customer, but also the better it is for them operationally as well, because, you can ensure that those people who do still contact you by telephone, for example, are the people who really need help by telephone, either for accessibility reasons or just because it's their preferred channel. So what we can do and what we have done in the past is we can help with framing those options in terms of how people contact an organisation to ensure that they are more likely to use those self-service options and adopt and use them. So, you know, with some work we did with a bank here in the UK, we worked with their contact centre so that when the options, when someone called the contact centre, we would talk to them about those self-service options, or the agents would be able to talk to them about the self-service options, and it increased the likelihood that the next time they interacted with the bank, they would go online to do so and drive that channel shift. So that's one example in how we did that. So through employing some nudges within the scripting and the language that was used within the contact center, we actually ensured that the next time people contacted the bank, they were 14% more likely to go through those self-service channels instead and do that online in the first instance. So it's a pretty significant impact considering this was a bank with over 20 million customers in the UK. So a sizable benefit to that organisation.
Okay, great. So I mentioned at the start of this discussion, rooted in the UK, but also growing practice across Asia Pacific, supporting brands out here. So just on the topic of nudge practice and also behavioural science, is this practice increasingly common across Asia and Asia Pacific? And how receptive are brands of using these techniques within this region?
Yeah, so it's a really good question because I get asked quite a lot about that kind of, I guess, the global applicability of the principles. And I guess there's two answers to the question. In terms of, you know, practically how widespread the use of these techniques and behavioral science more generally is, it is very much now a global phenomenon. There has been, I think, you know, as I say, it was sort of led by the public sector. The last figure I saw, I think there were over 170 different nudge units within public sector all around the world who are helping apply these principles to public sector challenges. And similarly, adoption in the private sector has been growing very fast as well. So, you know, there is that growth. It's definitely is happening at pace. There's a huge expansion in markets like India, for example, in terms of the applications of behavioural science and knowledge base around that. It's not something that is it's not true to say, as it was maybe 10 years ago, that there were sort of pockets of practice happening mainly in the US, the UK, Israel, and a couple of other markets. It's actually very much a widespread phenomenon now, and obviously as a global practice ourselves at Go Beyond Partners, we have the capability to deliver that in different markets. I think the second aspect of this, which is a question I get asked quite a lot, is how transferable some of these principles are to different markets and different cultures. And one thing that's really interesting about behavioral science and has consistently told us is that some of the fundamentals of behavioral science, the behavioral biases that we are all prone to as humans, are consistent wherever you go in the world. And that's because, you know, the cultural differences that exist within the world and the differences around the world is a relatively recent phenomenon in terms of human evolution. Our brains fundamentally look the same wherever you are in the world. And therefore, these underlying behavioral biases that are products of our evolution are pretty consistent where you go in the world. What does differ is the application and the context in different markets. And that's where local knowledge is really beneficial. And as a global practice, we obviously have that local knowledge and are able to apply it. So, you know, to give you an example, we were working with a client where we were looking in the investment world, one of the leading global investment banks, and they were looking to better engage with women as clients. So women are getting increasingly close to representing 50% of the wealth market, but their client base didn't reflect that. And they were trying to address that and address some of the biases that their advisors have when dealing with high net worth women. And we initially worked on that work in Western Europe. They were looking to roll that out on a global basis. And what became clear very, very quickly was that localized knowledge around some of the cultural factors in different markets was very important. So, for example, when talking to women about their wealth and investments in the Middle East, A lot of the practices that were being adopted in Western Europe just didn't apply, because not least because of Sharia law and things like that meant that actually engaging with women in those markets, there were some additional challenges that needed to be overcome. And so, you know, when working on projects like that, what's really important is that local knowledge and bringing that cultural context into understanding how people make decisions. You know, behavioral science tells us that the context in which we make decisions has a huge influence on the decisions that we make. So that those cultural factors and the differences between different markets and those dynamics is really important. And that's why having that local knowledge is really critical. So to answer, you know, to summarize in answering your question, behavioral science is relevant in every market throughout the world and is being increasingly widely adopted. But that local knowledge and understanding of the cultural context is really, really critical to do so effectively.
Yeah, that's absolutely. You mentioned India just then as well in part of your answer. I was in Mumbai earlier this week. It's such a growing and diverse market. So, yeah. And then more broadly, just it's great to hear that these practices are growing in use around the world. If you don't mind, we've spoken about regional similarities and differences, and you also touched on gender there in relation to high net worth women. Something that was in my mind earlier when you were talking was also other demographical differences. So such as age, for instance, are these being identified, and is that something brands should be aware of when it comes to presenting their, devising their customer engagement strategies?
It's a really interesting question, I think, and I don't know, Dave, you've probably got a perspective on this as well, but I think from a behavioral viewpoint, you know, what we know about people, again, is that, you know, those biases can that we are prone to are, you know, largely irrespective of gender and age differences, for example. They are hardwired into our brains, so they will be activating throughout our lifetime. But there might be slight differences in, again, in that context as a result of age. So to give you an example, when we were working on that project where we're looking to drive channel shift for a bank, one of the kind of internal biases, if you like, within the bank was that the challenge was not addressable for older audiences. So they had a lot of older customers, typically retired customers, and yeah, the feeling was they wouldn't engage with the digital products that this bank had because they weren't online, generally speaking. And what was interesting was we were able to sort of address that bias that the staff within the bank had in a couple of ways. One was because we had data that showed that actually, you know, there was an increasingly large proportion of the population, particularly post-COVID, of the older population who were very comfortable transacting online. So, you know, if they were comfortable transacting with Amazon, they were likely going to be comfortable with transacting with the bank online as well. And then the other aspect of it was that actually the real barriers, which maybe weren't the stated conscious barriers of that audience, but the real barriers were really to do with their competency. So, you know, when you ask older audiences about transacting online, they will often raise questions about concerns about security and safety and so on. But actually, when you see their behavior, what the barriers are, the real barriers tend to relate more to confidence and actually understanding and the ease of use of certain websites, for example, which don't necessarily have those less digitally native audiences in mind. So what we did when, as part of that project, was one of the things that the agents were trained to do was to guide those older audiences on the phone through how to transact via the website. And what we found was that once they could, you know, walk them through the process and sort of accompany, they were looking at the same screens at the same time the customer was, they were much, much more likely as a result of that to then next time be confident and comfortable with transacting. So you know, what some of our, I guess it's an example of what you might call unconscious bias that we have about certain audiences doesn't necessarily reflect the reality. And so it's really important to bear that in mind when we're thinking about those differences between audiences.
Yeah, I mean, building on that, Richard, I completely agree. You know, Nikki, as a marketeer, you'll understand that the value and perils of segmentation in terms of, you know, it's useful to segment your audience, and demographics is a really, you know, useful way to do that. But equally, very dangerous to say all old people behave in a certain way, all young people behave in a certain way. You know, and I think one of the things that we see is that because we are now in such a data-rich environment, that actually behavioral segmentation rather than sort of demographic segmentation becomes, you know, increasingly valuable and possible, you know, down to the segment of one. You know, what I have done, what I have viewed, what I have purchased becomes the trigger, if you like, for understanding me and anticipating what I might require to do next and how to guide or nudge me towards, you know, that best solution based on my context at an individual level. You know, we still do customer journey design, persona, you know, understanding who the customer in the journey might be is extremely valuable to design the journey. But when it comes down to supporting the individual customer, then increasingly it's possible to do that on the basis of actual behavior, as opposed to assuming that all people that look similar behave similarly, which may not be the case.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that segment of one and the huge importance of data and analytics today to deliver that uber personalized experience per consumer, I think is absolutely where brands need to be playing today. That's really interesting. Thank you both, both Richard Chataway there and Dave Patman from Go Beyond Partners. Thanks to both of you and look forward to episode 2, which will be coming soon. So thanks for your time and thanks for everyone who listened in today.
Thanks, Nikki.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the British Chamber of Commerce Singapore's podcast channel. Before you go, don't forget to subscribe and why not leave us a rating and review on Spotify, Apple, Google and the other podcast platforms. For more information about the Chamber, please visit our website at www.britcham.org.sg and tune in next time for a brand new episode.